You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
This episode is brought to you by 818 Tequila, delicious and smooth tequila, meaning harmony with the earth. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
Welcome to Inside Julia's Kitchen, the podcast of the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. I'm your host, Todd Shulkin, the Foundation's Executive Director. Our show takes you inside the Foundation's world to meet the talented people we have the great fortune of learning from all the time. On today's show, we welcome Brazilian cooking sensation Jaine Matkevich. In this episode, we'll talk to Jaine about going from the Amazon to Hollywood, winning the Julia Child Challenge, and we'll hear Jaine's Julia moment. Stay with us. We'll be right back. As always, we launch the conversation with an inspiration from Julia. Dear to Julia's heart was inspiring home cooks to be just that, dedicated and passionate home cooks, as she saw herself. She also saw cooking as a social activity. It was rarely something she did alone. Usually she cooked with family and friends, not just for them. Many a visitor with an invitation to Julia's house in Cambridge would be surprised to be ushered straight into the kitchen upon arrival to help prepare the meal. Julia thrived on the social aspects of cooking, the teamwork, the camaraderie, the sharing of ideas, and the warmth that comes with genuine hospitality. To Julia, cooking embodies all of that, not only skill and butter. It is in this spirit that the Foundation participated in the recent Food Network and Discovery Plus cooking competition, the Julia Child Challenge. Now, we're aware that many fans think Julia would have hated the idea of a cooking competition. But in actuality, modern cooking competitions weren't really even a thing before Julia died in 2004, so we really don't know what Julia would have said about it. Unfortunately, not all cooking competitions are the same. What we do know is Julia valued anything that was designed to teach and inspire home cooks. And not only did the Julia Child Challenge embrace both aspects by putting passionate home cooks at the center of the action, it also features Julia teaching from clips from the French chef. It's as if Julia is setting the challenges, which were, if you haven't watched it yet, to reinterpret classic French dishes based upon the contestant's own life experience and cultural background. The competition was friendly and educational, with a prize of an all-expense-paid course at the Cordon Bleu in Paris, where, of course, Julia went, and that's designed to further the winner's interest in the culinary arts. Rotating guest judges, many of whom knew Julia personally, like Dory Greenspan, Michael Voltaggio, Julia Child Award co-recipient Susan Feniger, and Sherry Yard, alongside her mentee, head judge Antonio Lofazzo, were there to support the contestants as much as scrutinize their dishes. As Dory said, Julia was there as both teacher and cheerleader. And for the viewer at home, there was instruction from Julia on everything from filleting sole, making mother sauces, to whipping up souffles. One of the home cooks who was channeling strong Julia vibes, only with a Brazilian accent, is the winner of the Julia Child Challenge, Jaine Matkevich. Born in a remote area of the Brazilian Amazon, Jaine discovered her heart was in cooking rather than the law she had studied to practice in Brazil. With a goal of becoming a professional food writer and the encouragement of her now husband, Douglas, Jaini decided to follow in Julia's footsteps and, knowing virtually no one, moved to Boston to study English and take cooking classes at Boston University's Culinary Arts Program, founded by Julia and Jacques Pepin and still supported by the foundation. After chronicling her journey in the Julia-themed commemorative issue of Cherry Bomb magazine, Jaini auditioned for the Julia Child Challenge, beating out 8 other passionate home cooks and Julia superfans for the Cordon Bleu Prize. She'll attend the course this fall, and now living in Oceanside, California, which is near San Diego, Jaini is pursuing her passion for cooking, food writing, teaching, and learning for others from others, just like Julia. She joins us today to share her incredible journey from the jungle to Hollywood. Welcome to the podcast, Jaini.
Hi, Todd. Thank you for having me inside Julia's kitchen today.
Well, it's great to be together, and I'm excited to talk to you about your amazing story and the future. So let's start with the past or up to the present, because it's just an amazing story, I think. Tell us, how exactly did you get from the depths of the Amazon to Boston, and how much did Julia in that part actually play a role in such a big move?
That's a funny story, Todd. So I, as you said, thank you for your kind words. I was born in a very remote area in the Amazon. My dad was a Polish guy that was researching vaccines and tropical diseases in the Amazon, and that's how my family ended up there. But I was born there. You know, cool job nowadays, right?
Yes, very current kind of work.
Yeah, so we lived there, and it was such a different upbringing. You know, I don't even, it's hard for me to put into words. People are always asking, how was it to grow up in the Amazon? And it really is like growing up in the Amazon. There's nothing alike.
And you weren't in like, because what is it called? Manaus is the big city that is in the Amazon. You were not in a big city.
Oh, no, not at all. It would take me like 5 days to get to Manaus. Oh, so wow. It was really, yeah. And we would travel by boat. You know, that is the type of thing. Like, we didn't have electricity at some point, or TV or internet, anything like that. So I was just like eating fruit from the trees, you know, playing around and cooking with whatever I could find. That was like my hobby. So I remember when we finally got a TV, I was watching cooking shows with my mom, because she would note down all the recipes, like the afternoon cooking shows, and then she would note down a cake recipe or something. And then we saw a quick clip of Julia on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, mm-hmm. and she was making spaghetti Marco Polo. And she was just so fun to watch. And I think that was for kids. It was a show for kids, right? I'd never seen that before.
Mr. Rogers is, yeah, Julia was doing she was like guest star on Mr. Rogers. And that's why she was making spaghetti Marco Polo, because it was kid friendly versus what's in Master.
And that just got me immediately. I fell in love with Julia that second, especially because I was a very different kid from everyone else in the village I grew up. So, you know, it was hard to find a kind of connection with someone, like feeling represented somehow. And Julia represented me. She was tall. She was, you know, she was Julia. And I loved her. I mean, everyone loves Julia. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, so obviously you've just described how remote it was, and that I don't think Julia was routinely on TV in Brazil, even if you're in Sao Paulo. So from there, when was the next time you saw Julia, or were you able to somehow by then have internet access, or when were you able to see more of Julia?
So yeah, Julia was not on TV, and still up to this day, not a lot of people know Julia in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So what happened is that I just grab onto that image I had. But the next time I saw Julia, I was already a teenager, and it was like Julie and Julia, the movie time. Mm-hmm. So then that was when I saw Julia again, and then I was a teenager already. So I was like, oh, now I can, you know, try to read her books. I remember her, I wanted to just get more connected to her by then. But another thing that happened is that I used to go to a French school because there's like this mission from the Catholic Church from France in the Amazon. And they built up the school for kids because we didn't have an education by then. So I grew up going to a French school. And, you know, they were speaking about French words like roquembouche, pâte à choux, all of that. And that was very whimsical to me. And I knew about Le Cordon Bleu back then because of the school and the connection I had with France somehow, which is very funny.
No, so Julia, well, it makes sense.
It makes sense now. So Julia was, you know, in between all of that. And then that's why I loved her so much also because of her French background and everything. Then I grew up and then I decided I wanted to become a chef. But my parents didn't let me because we didn't have any restaurants back then over there. So what would I, you know, what kind of work would I do?
And at that time, your parents were still living in this remote village in the Amazon.
Yeah, we moved to a slightly larger city so I could attend high school, but it was not that different, you know. It's still
it
very
wasn't
remote.
Manaus.
No, it wasn't Manaus. And then I went to law school because my mom said so, and I did. And I disliked it very much. I spent like the 6 years just dreaming about cooking, you know, and doing what I love.
And where did you go to law school? How far away from where you grew up did you go to law school?
I went to law school in the south of Brazil. It was very far. It was like the same distance from the coasts here.
I see. So you did leave home and go to a totally different environment to study law.
I did. It's actually the state where my husband is from, but we didn't meet when I was there. We actually met in the Amazon. So
oh, okay.
It's another.
A whole other story.
I know. And then I went to law school. But the whole thing is that when I was in law school all the time, the only thing I wanted to do was cook or talk about cooking, you know, or think about food. So I knew deep down that was something I wanted to do. And then I had this deal with my mom. Then I told her, as soon as I get my bar, I'm going to give it to you, and then I'm going to go follow my dreams. And then she said, I'm fine with it.
Oh, so she wanted you to have the education, but once you got it, that she felt like you had sort of a backup plan, so she was more comfortable with you taking risks.
Exactly, yeah. And then, but the whole thing is that during this time, when I was at law school, I actually lost my dad. In a car accident, and then he was only 44, so things you know changed a lot for us, for me and my mom, and especially I think I started seeing life from a different perspective. It's just more, what am I going to do if I only live this much? Do I want to waste this time? Do I want to go for what I love? You know, it was always this feeling of missing out somehow. And I didn't want to feel like that anymore. And my dad was a great cook. He was just like very intuitive, natural type of cook. And I learned all of this, I know, with him. So I told Douglas, my boyfriend at the time, that I wanted to follow in Julia's footsteps because I decided I wanted to change my life. And she was my hero. You know, she was an immigrant in France too. So I had this in common. Mm-hmm. I loved cooking. She loved cooking. And we were both very tall. So I said, I think it's enough.
And I know enough about this story. Douglas, as amazing guy, just was like, yeah, sure. I'll move to a foreign country where I barely speak the language while you can follow your dream.
I know. Every time I tell the story, people are like, oh, Douglas, you're so sweet. And he really is, because he had no idea. We both had no idea how we would go on that. You know, it was just, okay, I want to do this. I want to learn English. And we didn't speak a word in English back then. So that was a challenge. But I knew.
And is that
I
just so people who are wondering, because I know that you know this is a sensitive subject, is that how you got a visa? By doing an English language class?
Exactly. Yes. That's how I got a visa. So that was the first. We kind of divided this whole task in smaller tasks. So the first task would be learn English. And then the second, apply for a master's degree at BU. And then next would be go to Le Cordon Bleu. You know, we had this planned out somehow, but life happens differently. It's not like we could control that. So as soon as we arrived, I remember I wanted to have a coffee. I didn't know how to order it. Doug didn't know either. And then we looked at each other at the same time, like, what have we done, Doug? Oh my God. And then, but he has been so supportive through this whole journey. So we decided we would learn English first. And then I spent about 4 years in English school. It's like an English as second language program. Mm-hmm. And during this time, a way that I actually improved my English was by reading cookbooks or reading, you know, food writing pieces, everything I could read in English that was interesting to me, talking about food. Mm-hmm. It was a way for me to improve it. And then I just fell in love with writing about food and reading about food. And then I decided that I didn't want to be a chef per se anymore, but I want to write about food and teach people how to cook the way I do. And because I feel like I have this very Brazilian approach to cooking, and I just wanted to share this.
And it by Brazilian approach, is that what you refer to, that like particularly in Brazil, cooking traditions are quite oral and they don't have the same deep cultural like kind of cookbook lineage?
Yeah, exactly. It's more like we pass the knowledge through generations, and it's always oral. And we just cook with our intuition somehow. We have a lot of techniques, of course, but there's this more, I would say, more emotional approach, you know, where you really understand what you're doing. You learn how to cook it first, and then from there, you just have to be more adventurous with it. So you learn how to do it by heart. And that's how I learned. So I thought, well, this is very different. You know, maybe I could write about this. And then I was on this another journey of, okay, now I want to be a writer in a language that I just learned.
Of course. And is that, so catch us up to Cherry Bomb. Was Cherry Bomb something you discovered and was one of the publications you were reading? Or how did you end up writing this essay about this story for Cherry Bomb magazine?
So I knew Cherry Bomb for even, I think, before I moved to the US. I loved the work and I was obsessed with them. I just want to read everything because it ties so much with what I like to write about. And I remember during the pandemic, they posted something on their Instagram saying, oh, we're accepting pitches for a special Julia issue, which I thought was fantastic. And then Doug and I were talking and he said, well, you should write to them because, you know, we changed our whole lives because we love Julia. And I think people could find this an interesting story. So I did. I pitched Cherry Bomb, and Carrie Diamond, the editor and founder of Cherry Bomb, she actually emailed me back and I couldn't believe it. And she was so kind and happy that I wanted to share my story because, you know, there's not a lot of people that cook and love Julia as much as I do in the Amazon. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was even more special to be able to talk about the place that I belong. And I never really had this chance before, you know, and then I just went for it. And it was so challenging to write, but so easy at the same time because it came straight from my heart. It was challenging to try and edit the story in a way that would make sense for everyone else, but it was so soothing to finally tell someone, you know, I love Julia so much. I changed my whole life so I could be closer to her somehow. So that was really, really amazing. And I love the article, how it turned out. And Carrie is simply the most amazing lady in the business.
No, I remember talking to her about the issue and she said, Todd, you're not going to believe this. I have this amazing story from this young woman from the Amazon writing about Julia. So she was so excited from the beginning. And for those who haven't read it, or if you haven't gotten the Cherry Bomb commemorative issue about Julia, which is full of wonderful stories, you should read Jayani's piece because while she's told us a lot, it's very moving, particularly about you know, the journey that she's had, which you can hear Jaini is a very bubbly, warm person, but there's been challenges. And of course, she mentions in the show the impact of her father's early death. So I encourage you. And I was curious, though, I know from Carrie's perspective and from the show, but after, in between being on the show and the article, did people reach out to you? Did you get feedback from strangers about the Jerry Baum article?
Oh, yes. That just really taught the most amazing thing that people message me. They still do all the time about, especially like this commonality. Some people that, you know, lost a parent too early, or some people that somehow went through challenges that look like mine. They message me and then we create this connection and it feels so good to know that we are not alone. So definitely the article changed everything for me. It really started my career as a writer, but also opened up other opportunities, pretty much like the show.
Perfect place to transition. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with more from the winner of Food Network's The Julia Child Challenge, Jaini Metkevich. Stay with us. We're going to talk to Jaini after the break about what that was like to compete for the Cordon Bleu Prize. Stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit Korin.com.
I'm Chava Periwan, co-host of Agave Road Trip on HRN, here to talk about 818 Tequila. 818 creates their tequila using traditional methods at a family-owned and operated distillery in Jalisco, Mexico. From the blue agave they grow to their recycled glass bottle, 818 emphasizes the earth's importance in all they do. Their distillery runs on biomass and solar power, which means they don't rely as much on fossil fuels and are able to reduce their carbon footprint. Their labels, corks, and boxes are all certified by the Forest Stewardship Council as coming from sustainably managed forests. 818 is a proud member of 1% for the Planet, through which they support HRN as well as Sacred, my organization in Jalisco, where together we transform agave byproducts and water waste into adobe bricks that are donated to local infrastructure projects, like a local library in Zapotitlán de Vadillo. Visit drink818.com to learn more about their sustainability efforts and find 818 near you. 818 has been part of so many magical nights for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
Welcome back. We're talking to the winner of Food Network's The Julia Child Challenge, Brazilian cooking sensation, Jaine Matkevich. So, Jaine, you gave us the story of sort of how you got from the Amazon to Boston to Hollywood. And so let's talk about the Julia Child Challenge. What was it like competing on the show? And was it something that, like, you got to Los Angeles and thought, you know, in your head you were visualizing how you were going to win? Or what was it like?
Todd, I had no idea. I mean, for me to be on the show already was like, well, you're just the most amazing thing. I was glad enough with this, you know, to know that how many people wanted to be there and I was picked to be there. So that was fun. And I did not expect to win. First, because I had this fear of... I didn't grow up with Julia's influence as much as my other competitors. So I always wonder, do I know enough about Julia? You know, do I feel comfortable doing this? But also because I think being an immigrant sometimes puts you in that position where you don't feel confident enough about anything. So it was like, I can't speak enough English. You know, they're not going to understand me. And what if I say something wrong? And what if I cook something wrong? But I think this is not exclusive to me. I think we were all very, you know, afraid to embark on this new adventure. But I Doug was like, you have to do this. If there's someone you have to do it for, it's Julia. You know that. And then I went.
Well, it was amazing to watch. I was lucky enough to be behind the scenes, but we were filming kind of at the height still of the pandemic. So there was a lot of separation between the cast and the producers. And but it was amazing to watch the competition. And there's so many unforgettable things from my side of particularly the first time the judges, like, you know, came back and gave us feedback. They were like, they were in shock because of the level of the food that all the contestants were making. They were like, this is better than the food like on professional shows. So they were blown away early on by everybody. And I was curious, like, were there things that you were shocked by, or did you ever feel like comfortable, or did it always feel like the sky is falling?
I think it was a mix, if I can say so, because I felt, you know, and this is really interesting, from the moment I first stepped into the set, it looked so much like Julia's kitchen. And then we were welcomed by Julia herself in the huge television. So in that matter, I felt comfortable and I felt like I had a familiar face waiting for me there. So it was like I was visiting Julia's house, really. But at the same time, everyone was so talented and passionate. And really, when I tasted their food, the only thing going through my mind was like, how can I compete with these people? They're so incredibly talented. And this is something I always thought about cooking shows. I always thought, I don't know if those food taste really good. I think sometimes they're just making it up. But no, this is not true. Food really tastes amazing. And I was so impressed by the quality and the level of the food we cooked. It was really fun.
And do you think that like the fact that everyone was good or could produce, you know, obviously everybody had their moments where because it's timed, it's just difficult to get mm-hmm. everything to turn out right. But did you feel like that helped everyone like step up their game? They were like, oh, wow, this person's doing that. Or how sort of competitive versus friendly did it feel?
Oh, I mean, it was, again, a mix because it felt really competitive because of the quality of the food. Like, everyone was doing their best. And, you know, it's hard to think sometimes that you can cook as good. But it also felt very friendly. I think the whole spirit of the competition was more focused in showing our journey through learning with Julia and from Julia and really sharing this love for her we had in common, this passion for cooking and all things culinary. And then in that matter, this feeling bonded us. And then I was competing, but in my mind, since day one, it was more like, I want to get to know these people. I love people. So, you know, I wanted to finally find people that I could talk about Julia all day. and then better if I could eat their food. So it was a bonus. I never really felt like this was a competition for me because I didn't want to go in that way. I wanted really for this to be an amazing experience that I would be always proud.
And how did that feel when you started getting the feedback from the judges who were a very esteemed set of accomplished chefs and food writers of praise for your food? Like, what was that like?
That was such a huge surprise. I think the first dish I cooked, I was so nervous and so stressed, you know, the whole thing. And I did not perform really well. And they were actually super kind. And then I figured...
Are you talking about the canals?
The canals.
Everyone was terrified with that day. I mean, we were all like, oh my God, is this going to be a train wreck?
It's funny, isn't it? Like, now that I watch the show and I'm like, what I was thinking about, for God's sake. But then the judges were so supportive even after that. Then I realized, you know, this is more about cooking the food I love and I cook at home than actually cooking something to impress everyone. And then I think that changed because, you know, I was thinking, oh my gosh.
Because do you eat fish canals? And do you eat fish canals in the Amazon?
Not at all. But I eat pan-fried fish all day. I could do this with my eyes closed. You know, I could have done a traditional soul with my eyes closed. But then I wanted to impress them so bad that I just went that way. And then I realized, thank God. You know, and from that moment on, I decided I would only cook food that really represented who I am and the way I cook and eat at home. So it worked. But it was always a surprise. I was never expecting them to like my food in any way. And then everyone was like, oh, this is delicious. So it was good, especially because I cooked a lot of Brazilian, you know, and it always feels good to have someone praise the food from your country.
Well, and for those listening who have not watched, Jaini is being incredibly modest because she often made the judges speechless with the deliciousness of her dishes, which I unfortunately never got to taste, but hopefully one day. But I can remember some of the, like, I think it was Sherry Yard's reaction to your mocha cake. Is that right? And she was like, just... like in shock because it was both good and original and different and, you know, that you were blowing their minds, as were many of the other contestants, particularly the three mm-hmm. finalists, including you, on a routine basis. So, I mean, did that give you confidence as that happened, or was it sort of like every week was a new day?
Well, thank you, Todd. I'll cook for you as much as you want. You know this. But really, the confidence is a funny thing for me. And I've been working on that for the longest time. But the being there and seeing someone you admire so much for their work in the food world say that you cook something that is, you know, good enough for Julia's table and everyone else, all the competitors there I respect so much, saying the exact same thing, just gave me the kind of boost I needed to just keep doing what I was doing. Because it's hard to figure out what kind of cook you are. You know, I've been living here for almost 6 years. I've been always trying to Americanize myself, to adapt. Now I stop with this. But, you know, it's not only about confidence in the kitchen, but it's also about confidence in myself, building myself as an immigrant and just finding that strength and understanding that what I find very common or simple might be something really interesting for someone else.
Well, and sometimes it's just that little bit of twist. I'm going to fast forward to the finale because there were certainly times in the finale where you might have, if there was actually a betting booth, you might have been tipped as the favorite, but you didn't necessarily sail through. You ended up encountering like several difficulties, and it really was like you made this ropa vieja dish, which is actually Latin, but not Brazilian, but you did it in a I can't remember. Is it ropa vieja Cuban, actually?
It's Cuban, yeah.
Yeah, so you did a Brazilian-style Cuban dish, beef bourguignon in the finale, which you spoiler alert, you burned it, right? And so, but what happened?
So the finale actually, and by the way, during the finale, I wasn't expecting to win at all. You know, I just wanted to finish all the.
Well, and behind the scenes, it looked like you might have been the favorite, but definitely it was clear that you were not sailing through by any stretch.
I was not. And now the whole thing was that I wanted the finale to be fun. I was trying to channel Julia in that spirit. You know, it's okay if you make a mistake. Just have fun, enjoy it. You are doing something you want to do. But it's hard when you have to do like all of these dishes in only 3 hours. So what happened is that I thought about bringing all those Brazilianness and Latin American influences to my menu, but I was nervous. I was so nervous. And I cooked, we have a similar kind of dish in Brazil, which is called vaca atolada, and it's very similar to roupa vieja. So, but I love roupa vieja, and then that's why I decided I would do a riff on it. So I cooked it. I cooked it many, many times in the past, and I burned it before. So I knew when I burned during the finale what I could do to fix it. So that's when practice came to help.
Oh my God, I'm having goosebumps because that's such a Julia thing, because I obviously knew that you burned it. I did not know that you burned it before, because to me, I think that was such a key piece of inspiration from Julia, which is you have to learn from your mistakes in cooking, and you almost have to make mistakes both to know how to do things better. But I always say the best chefs, even restaurant chefs, it's not that they're perfectionists or perfect. It's that they know how to fix things when they get in crisis.
And being on a cooking show is pretty much, I think it's actually like 60% knowing how to fix things, and 40% knowing how to do things. And practice is really good. Like, I knew how to fix a bunch of things when they went south. So that is really what I think helped me during the show, because so many things went wrong. I can even not remember how many dishes.
Well, I love hearing now that you'd actually burned that dish before, which because we all were watching that. And we're like, oh, my God, is it going to be inedible because it's burnt? And then, of course, the judges didn't. Well, they must have known, because you can't always tell on the television screen the way it's shot. But the judges are sitting to the side, so they're not immediately there. But they can pretty much see what's going on. They just have to be paying attention at that moment.
Yeah. And I burnt it before. And what I knew, and this is actually my dad that taught me. He said, you know, don't scrape the pan, just scoop out from the top part, and then you have to refresh some flavors. You have to add some, you know, different kind of nuance to it. So what I did, I added some fresh wine towards the end so it would have more acidity. And I was trying to just mask up the burnt flavor. But I think they probably had to throw the pressure cooker away because things were awful.
Wow. Oh, I love that. And I didn't know that either, that you sort of channeled that spirit of your father to make the save. Wow. That's so
Todd, lovely. Since he passed and I've been on this journey of doing what I love, I think he has been following me, you know, and during the show, I could feel that so many times. It's just like that kind of push you need. Just go for it. You can do it, you know, and I want people to believe that, because that is magic, and it really can change things.
Absolutely. You know how to make everyone verklempt with your story. So I want to change to, before we run out of time, to talk about Paris and the Cordon Bleu, and you'll be going this fall. And I'm just curious to kind of hear your thoughts on, like, you know, what your expectations are, what you're worried about. I think, do you speak enough French already from having the education that you talked about?
I can understand a lot of French. I cannot speak, unfortunately, but I'm doing classes now, getting ready, because I wanted to have the full experience. but I'm so excited, and this is really, I've been dreaming about this since I can remember being alive. So this is like everything came to reality so suddenly, and it feels magic, and I'm so excited, and The sad thing is that Doug's not going to be joining me, so I'm going to be alone. But I'm excited to eat everything. I'm actually going to the gym because I have to lose some weight so I can eat all the croissants I want in Paris.
Well, the great thing in Paris is a very walkable city, so you can do lots of walking too.
I'm serious. And I can walk holding a croissant in my hand, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe to explain, one of the reasons Douglas can't go with you is just because of visa things with you being already immigrants to the U.S. to then be able to go to Paris without him doing a course as well is difficult.
Yeah, yeah. This whole being an immigrant is so hard. You know, you have to abide by all these rules and everything. So we're in process of him, you know, getting his documents settled and everything. So it might take more time. And I decided to go this year still. I could go next year, but I'm so excited. I can't wait anymore. I just want to go.
Well, and you have a lovely Instagram feed where you do a lot of posts and videos and things. And are you kind of, do you have in your mind, depending on how tired and exhausted you are, that you will do kind of posts or storytelling about your journey?
So I love sharing everything with people, you know, all the little tricks, everything I'm eating. But the whole thing with Paris is that since the show came out and I got so many messages and I feel like people are excited to go on that journey with me. So it feels like kind of mandatory for me to share it. You know, I will share with much pleasure, but also because this doesn't belong only to me. This belongs to everyone that has had this type of dream in the past, you know, and I want people to feel encouraged by it. So definitely share everything. And I want people to really feel like they're in Paris experiencing Le Cordon Bleu with me by my side.
And I want to go back to Brazil for a second before we go to the final break. And did the Food Network show, did the Julia Child Challenge end up airing in Brazil? Or how aware are people of what you're doing back home?
It is going to air towards the end of June. People are sending me photos of the commercials already. Brazilians are crazy with this. Like, no one believes a Brazilian won a Julia Child competition. I still don't believe it fully. But it's so, our country has been going through difficult times. And I feel like whenever someone stands out doing something they love, you know, it could be in sports, art, or everything, we have this communal sense of positivity and just happiness, you know, to feel represented somehow. So I think I'm glad to bring that type of joy to my people somehow. And I just want people to get cooking more and learning about Julia more and more. And they love the HBO Julia show as well. So this is a good entrance way for people to get to know Julia. And then now they're going to cook with us.
I see. So the scripted series in HBO Max aired already because they have HBO Max in Brazil. And then do they have Food Network in Brazil, or how is it going to play in Brazil?
Oh, yeah, we do have Food Network, but I think the show is going to play in other channels too, like the Discovery channels. Mm-hmm. And we do love some Discovery in Brazil, so I think it's going to be fun.
So you basically still have that to come, like, because the show hasn't aired yet in Brazil, but will, that's going to kind of change your profile there as well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's always a challenge because it's always a challenge to decide in what language should I post, because, you know, I'm a different person speaking in English and in Portuguese. So now I want everyone to know about this, but I don't want the American people to feel left out. So please, if you have any tips, Todd.
I think you have to alternate. I read your Portuguese posts and usually, I mean, I speak a little bit of Italian, a little bit of Spanish, and a decent amount of French, and I feel like Portuguese is all of those mixed together. So usually I can figure it out, and there's Google Translate. And I are you like a super serious and not bubbly person in Portuguese?
No, I'm actually a little bit extra. I'm more bubbly.
Oh, you're like, okay, all right. Well,
I think you're getting my serious version right now.
Okay. Well, that's just going to encourage people to want to know what you're saying in Portuguese, I think. And yeah, no, I think you alternate. I think because they're both who you are. And I love that point that you made, though, but I feel that way too, that you often have a slightly, not you personally, one often has a different personality or slightly different personality, particularly if you're bilingual or in or had a native language and then switched. It's really fascinating where you it's not uncommon. I don't know why it is, but it's not uncommon.
I know. It's the same thing. Since when I learned how to speak English fluently, I had this conversation with, you know, my family and everything, saying about how I feel like I'm a different person speaking in another language. So I'm excited to see the French version of me now.
Yes, we all are. All right. Well, we're going to take a break and we'll be back to hear Jaini's Julia moment. Let us know what you think of today's show. Send us an email or voice memo to contact@juliachildfoundation.org. Better yet, tweet us @juliachildjcf. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
When you flip anything, you just have to have the courage of your convictions, particularly if it's sort of a loose mass like this. Well, that didn't go very well. See, when I flipped it, I didn't have the courage to do it the way I should have. But you can always pick it up, and if you're alone in the kitchen, who is going to see?
From Julia's immortal words, we move into our last segment, which we call the Julia Moment. Here's when we ask our guests to share their favorite Julia memory moment or how she has inspired them in their career. Jaini, I'm curious what you're going to say. You've already told us many Julia moments. What's your official Julia moment?
Well, you know, I have a lot of Julia moments for sure. Winning the show was actually, I think, the biggest of them because it was just so emotional. But I have another story that I never shared, but I would love to.
Please.
So when I was, I finally, you know, decided that I wanted to stay in the US, and then I applied for this whole immigration thing, and then it took me like 2.5 to 3 years to finally get a green card, right? Because this is a whole other story. But then Doug and I were moving to California, and then we stopped at the Smithsonian to see Julia's Kitchen. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I remember they were closing for 2 weeks the whole food section of the museum because they would do some renovations. And I couldn't find any tickets, so I had to call them like 3 times a day. Please, 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 let me stop there. I want to see Julia's Kitchen. And then it worked out.
And was this in between when you'd done the show, but it was still a secret?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I was still auditioning.
This was on your way to California to do the taping.
Yeah, so I was still auditioning for the show. There was the possibility for me to be on the show, but there was a detail to it. I need to have a green card, you know, because it was a requirement for me to be on the show. And I had a work permit so far, but I did not have a green card, and I could not travel with a work permit. So I didn't know what was the prize, but I knew about this requirement that I would need a green card.
Oh, that's right, because they didn't reveal the Cordon Bleu prize until the first day you were there.
Yeah, no, they did not. I did not know about that. So there was this. I wanted to be on the show, and then I didn't know if that would be possible because my lawyer said, well, it might take more 8 to 10 months for you to get a green card. So, you know, you cannot do this without it. And they said, well, that's okay. I'm just going to arrive in California and see how things go. And then we stopped at this kitchen. And, you know, I was just trying to channel that spirit of really feeling grateful for how far I have come so far. Because I was in the Amazon a few years ago dreaming about this day where I could do this. And then I was finally there. And I just felt so grateful and so enthusiastic about the future somehow. And Doug and I were talking if we were talking with Julia. And then we both said, Julia, if you think I should be on the show, I think you have to help me with this green card thing. And then we both laughed. And then Todd, this gives me goosebumps. And I hope people don't think I'm making this up. But I got my green card the next day.
Wow. Yeah, I have goosebumps, but I believe it. And I have to say, so you're saying you and Doug visited the installation of the kitchen at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. And while you were there, you made this wish together?
Yes, we made this wish together because we had
like in front of the kitchen installation.
In front of the kitchen, yes, because it's impossible for you to be there and not feel like Julia is there. It's her kitchen.
No, and that's so fat. I have goosebumps again because I always say when you're there, it feels like a shrine. It feels slightly religious. And yeah. The fact that like you guys went there like a wishing well and your wish was granted. I was like, you can't make this stuff. You can't make this stuff up.
I know. And then it was so funny because the whole thing, I had to go through immigration interviews to get a green card approved. So I had to be working already in order to get to the interview point. Then they would grant me a green card. But because of the pandemic, they changed things a bit and they were granting people green cards without interviews. So that was the reason mine was so quick. And then when I called my lawyers, I said, well, I got an email this morning saying that I got a green card, but, you know, it's not the right timing. And then she explained, but she said, you know, it sounds like a miracle to me. And I'm like, well, it sounds like a miracle to me too. So that was, you know, I don't know if it was Julia, if it was not, but I want to believe she was there and I want to believe she was happy with the path I was following. And I just try to think of her whenever I want some advice, even during the show, you know, in my mind was like, what would Julia do? And then I think somehow the universe helped me in that way.
Well, I think your whole story is so inspiring, and it's the parallels of how Julia's story inspired you and how I really hope that your story will also inspire others. And I can't wait to follow your journey. It's only the sky's the limit, I think.
Thank you, Todd. I'm really, the only thing that lives in me right now is gratitude to everyone and everything that happened to me. You know, it's been a long journey, but a really fun one. And that's the main thing in my life. I just want things to be fun and easy and light, because that is really why we are here, you know, to enjoy this little time we have.
And for things to be delicious. I'm sure you're going to endorse that.
Exactly. For us to eat a lot, for us to enjoy the pleasures of the table.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jaini. And we look forward to hearing and talking to you after you come back from the Cordon Bleu in Paris.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'll definitely come back with a lot of delicious things in the bag. And I can't wait to share this whole journey with you. And I hope I'll make Julia proud somehow.
I can't imagine that you will not. And to share in Jaini's journey. As I said, she does great posts on Instagram. Her handle is @Makavich, which I will spell because I don't think anyone would naturally know how to spell. I'm probably not even saying it right. So it's M-A-C-K like Mac, I-E-V-I, C like Charlie, Z like Zebra. And it's the same handle, @Makavich on Twitter. And she's @Jaini.Makavich on Facebook. And Jaini is the Brazilian version of Jane, I think you told me, right? And it's J-A-I-N-E. So there you go. Those are the ways to keep up with Jaini and follow her journey to the Cordon Bleu in Paris and beyond. For all the latest from the foundation, it's @JuliaChild on Facebook and @JuliaChild Foundation on Instagram. It's @JuliaChildJCF and I'm @TShulkin on Twitter. The Julia Child audio clip from The French Chef is used with permission from our friend at WGBH. Thanks, as always, to my co-producer at the Foundation, Lauren Salkeld, and our sound engineer at Heritage Radio Network, Matt Patterson. Our theme song is New French Horn by Novi Valtorni. We're on the air on Heritage Radio Network on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, with downloads available soon after, wherever you find your podcasts. We look forward to bringing you back into the Foundation's world next time on Inside Julia's Kitchen. Inside Julia's Kitchen is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.